the December 7th. Definition of the term mikraot gedolot. All right, it's a very simple termination. If you want to put a perush into a widely read sefer, including the text of the Tanakh, starting with Torah, of course, you want to sell as many copies as possible. So you put in as much as you can on the page. The reason why it was called gedolot is because these were large pages. Right, so to call this a mikraot gedolot, this is sort of a misnomer, but the rabbinic Bibles, how did they look over the years? So, who made the cut on the original cut in 1524 is not necessarily a function of the people you know better, right? Probably no one in this room has ever heard of a commentary named Ibn Yahya, yet he made the first cut. What gives someone long-lasting popularity? Yeah, it's not an easy question to answer. There's a saying in the Gemara, Hakol Tolui B'Mazal Afilu Sefer Torah Shebaheichal. You know, there's a contemporary of Rashi. His name was Rabbi Elazar. And sometimes he's known as his father's name, sometimes he's known by the name of his place, but he lived in Italy, and he wrote a commentary that looks very much like Rashi. Right? And the commentary is called Medrash Seichel Tov. And I doubt if anyone ever heard of that. Right? So, what can I say? There's a lot of work here. I'm not saying it's mazel. Rashi became famous because of his parish to the Talmud. Right, and they worked together. His Perush to the Torah was written first, but his Perushim to the Talmud were written when he was in his early 20s. B'chori started working on his Perush to the Torah when he was a child. Right, so, be that as it may, I'm not so much interested in the first cut, I'm interested in the last cut. Who's in now, okay? So, right away you have... There's some pages here of just three pages in the Choveret I asked you to look at. Okay, this page is what the last mikraot gedolot looks like. I believe you've seen them. They're the thin blue covers. It's Mosagar HaKuk, right? And this is a typical page, two sides of the mikraot gedolot that you're probably familiar with, right? Okay. Right. So what I'd like to do is to analyze the differences between them. And I imagine that in 10 years from now, I'm going to have to teach this part of the course differently because now there's another mikraot gedolot that's coming out. The Art Scrolls mikraot gedolot. Okay? Why do they want a piece of the action? So I would guess that it's as follows. I mean, by answering that question, I want to differentiate between what was in existence all along since 1524, and what's known as a scientific edition. The first scientific edition of any perush on the Torah was written in 1876 by a man named Abraham Berliner. He was very unusual for that time, accepted in the Torah world and in the scholarship world. Usually acceptance in one of those hustled you in the other. That time. In many places in the world today, but that's the truth today too in some places. So there were a few other people like that in this time period, right? That's be an interesting history lesson in itself. Okay. I don't have time, sorry. Maybe another time if we still have time we can talk about that. So in 1905, he wrote a second edition. See, there's quite a bit of time in between. He was quite aged. He wrote a second edition of that, and that you can buy in any Sfarim store. I remember buying it here at the YU Sfarim store for about $7. It's a thin volume. It is every word of Rashi from the first perush to the last perush, nothing but that. There's no text, just everything in Rashi, some notes at the bottom, and then sometimes some discussions of gears of change and the like. I ask you to turn back about 8 weeks with me to when we learned how Ezra, it's a sifrei in Parshas Vizos HaBracha. Remember, we described this as Ezra taking out all the Torahs he had at the time. The Medrash said three. The Radak said it's more like 300, but let's just, not going to quibble on these numbers right now. But that Ezra put out Torahs on various tables to determine what should be our true text. They didn't have Moshe's Torah, or they didn't have an undeniably correct Torah, right? They had, but by definition, this means that there were differences, right? There were divergences. This Torah said this word, this Torah said that word. Not only does this Medrash admit to such a task, it names names. It gives you examples of where Ezra found discrepancies. You hear what you read me? So that's something we discussed before. Please make my day. I've had a very tough day already on the highway. Someone please tell me what Masoretic phenomenon does the Radak say is explained by this process?
What's Masoretic mean?
Masorah?
No.
You know? Okay. Masoretic phenomenon is explained by Ezra picking these and picking those and not being sure when and sometimes where. He would usually go by the majority, 290 against 10, or all 300 said the word gracious, for goodness sakes. Yes?
You're talking about that you might get like a completely different Torah? Is that what you're saying?
Well, that was part of it. Kriyuksiv, yes. Kriyuksiv, that when he wasn't sure, based on the numbers, which way to go, which would never happen if there's only three Torahs, right? You only have two choices with three Torahs, 3-0 and 2-1, right? It's an overwhelming majority, 2-1, but it's only a majority of one, right? When you have 300 Torahs, usually it's 300-0 or 290-10, but when it's 160-140, right, the Radak says that Ezra had to put both words in there. You hear? Okay, that's a little controversial, because the Gemara says, Kriyuksiv is a lot of motion. You see, okay, just saying. All right? Okay. That process that I just described is what Berliner did with the Kisvei Yad he had of Rashi. In 1524, the Christians just took a few. Maybe two or three or five. Right? Berliner took over 100. And he analyzed them. He compared them. You get it? I give one example. In Parshas, I'm going to read it actually. Parshas Akev. Rashi on the pasuk, the santem es devarai eva out levavchem. You said it this morning. Right? Okay. I'm going to read it. This sitter is, this chumash has a mistake in it. All right, this is not shvi; it's shishi. It says this is shvi. That's why I'm having trouble finding it. Shvi in Parshas Akev is very famous, the same as Maftir. There is no shvi in Parshas Akev, so that's why I'm sorry. That's why I'm taking so long. But it's ironic. this has a mistake in it. While I'm looking at a famous mistake in Rashi on the pasuk. The Samtem is the right after the Torah had said, if you don't listen to me, Yishmru lachem, peditel avachem, v'sartem, v'atistem, v'atim, v'shach, v'isem lahem, v'chorah av Hashem, v'tzorah, v'shashmam, v'li, v'atorah, v'mol, v'sitem, v'lava, v'abadetem, v'heirom, v'alor, v'sitem, v'shashem, v'sitem, v'lava. I'm going to kick you out of the land. Right? And then the next pasuk says, the Samtem is the, make sure you keep your these words on your in your heart. And Rashi says, that the Santem refers specifically when I kick you out. Right? And this is what has to go on. He says, Af la'achar she'tiglu, after you go into Golus, and I kick you out of Israel, and you're in Rome, and you're in Africa, and you're in the New World, hayu mitzuyanim b'mitzvos, an unusual terminology, be outstanding in your mitzvah observance. I would have expected something like shemru mitzvos, mitzuyanim. It's very unusual. It means that the Rashi took taking this in some place. He says, be excellent and outstanding in your mitzvahs. Hanichu tefillin, don't forget to keep wearing your tefillin. Asu mezuzahs, make sure that you keep on putting all those mezuzahs on your doors. Kedei shelo yihiyu lohem chadoshim kishetechazru. So that these two mitzvahs are not new to you when you return to Israel. What is the implication of this Rashi? And then he quotes a pasuk to prove it. Chenu omer, pasuk in Yirmiyahu. Hatsivi loch tziyunim. Make markers for yourself. The mitzvahs are markers, so that you should keep them in France and in America, so that when you get back to Israel, you don't forget to do them. Come on, what's the famous implication Ramban says in this pasuk, in this Rashi? No.
That you don't have to keep the mitzvahs.
Right, that the mitzvahs are only for Israel. And that the only reason why we keep them outside of Israel is so that we shouldn't forget them. That when we get back, they're not new to us. What? Do you know a Gemara that says this? Where did Rashi get this? So Berliner, this is a famous example of what he did. This is in every single Rashi ever. In fact, Berliner kept it in his text. That's what you're supposed to do when you see what you prove obviously is a mistake. You have to keep the text as it is. This is the way it appears in the manuscript. You don't write it differently in your text. All right? You have to write it with the mistake, and then in the footnote, you write at the bottom, he probably read this wrong, or he was quoting this passage by heart, and something like that. You know what I'm saying? All right? And he got it wrong, whatever it is. He didn't have a good editor. Okay? When I put out my Mishlei, right, about 5 years ago, I paid the Yeshiva Bachar in Israel $2,000 to read through the entire book and look up every single footnote to make sure that when I said it's Brachos Daf Yud Zayin Bar Aleph, that it's not Yud Zayin Bar Aleph. Altogether, we found about 20 such examples. Right? I don't want someone looking up here Brachos Yud Zayin when it's really Yavamos Yud Zayin. And the guy wrote it, wrote something. Okay. So this kind of thing can happen. Okay, that's where we have editors. So on this particular example, there he quotes "Hatsivi loch siyunim." This is a pasuk in Yirmiyahu, the Haftorah of Rosh Hashanah. When Yirmiyahu tells the people about to go into exile, because it fits our pasuk, Avad Tem Era, right? You with me? He's about to tell people about to go into exile, don't forget your way back, because you're coming back. Right? So Berliner says, this is simple, right? If you recall, at the very end of the last class, I told you about a small little parish called Toldot Aharon. You can't call it a parish, but it appears on every page of the Mikros Gedolos, right between the text and Rashi. It's this little line right there. You see it on every page of the Mikros Gedolos. Now you know what it is. It's written as Rosh Tevos. None of you have the material in front of you, right? It's written as Rosh Tevos. Toldos Aharon. And what it does is it tells you, very small print here, it tells you where these particular psukim are darshaned in the Gemara. Okay, that's all. I want to know, this reminds me of Gemara in Sota. I think, no, it's Yavamos. Take a look, it's right in front of you. Okay? This is very limiting because it's only the Talmud Bavli. It just does the Bavli. There are many other sources, Tanchuma, Medrash Tadshe, Gracious Rabosi. There are 100 such sources you can choose from if you really want to get an exhaustive list. Right? Okay, so there is a book in 4 volumes It's called Torah, HaKetuvah, HaMesurah. Three volumes, usually Torah, to be Ksuvim, and then the son of the man who did it, as both the father and the son of the man who did it, wrote a fourth volume with more Torah, more Neviim, and more Ksuvim in it. This is what it does. It starts with Bereishis, and it covers practically every pasuk in the Tanakh, except the pasuk like Vayidbar Hashem al Moshe l'Emor. Right? It covers every pasuk. Bereishis bara Elokim Hashamayim v'ha'aretz, and then it gives you the 72 places where this pasuk is mentioned. It was so exhaustive. This was done before computers. This is a book that's 40 years old. Right? Imagine how many years he must have been poring over texts. It's not brilliant work. It's ditch-flesh work. All you have to do is just say, where does Mesefet, go through Mesefet Sagomas, and quote. Every time it quotes a pasuk, I'm putting it on that page. You get it? Right? So Toldos Aharon is not going to appear in any Mikros Gedolos anymore, because there's so much better stuff out there. Got it? Okay. There is a work on the Talmud Bavli called the Torah Tzmima. Are you familiar with that? Torah Tzmima. He was the Netziv's nephew. He was also the Aruch HaShulchan's son. He lived here in Yonkers in the 30s. Passed away in the mid-30s. Right? You had a book, My Uncle the Netziv, the famous book that made the... It made waves. I wish I had more time to tell you stories. But the Netziv was married very young. He was married about 16 and had a child by the time he was 18. And that wife died. And he married very late in life to a much younger woman and had, get this, a child younger than a child later that was younger than his grandnephew. Not just nephew, grandnephew. You know what I'm saying? It's okay to have a child younger than a grandchild. That happens. He had a child younger than a great-grandchild. Right? And there were famous people. Bar Ilan and Berlin. Chaim Berlin. Right? Chaim Berlin and the man Bar Ilan University is named after were brothers something like 50 years apart. Great story. The Torah Tzmima was the nephew of the older one, and he wrote a sefer. Excellent, you should all have it. You probably got it for your bar mitzvah. It's a big bar mitzvah present. With every pasuk in the Torah, with the places where the Gemara cites this pasuk, and then his excellent explanations at the bottom. Right? So I don't need Torah Toldos Aharon anymore, right? Okay, so if you look up Torah, Ksuvah, and Mesurah, this pasuk in Yirmiyahu Perek Lamed Aleph, listen to what it says. Please show me that you're awake. It says, just like Rashi starts off, I'm going to go into Golos, make sure that you continue to give Trumos and Maestros in the surrounding lands of Israel so that it's not new to you when you get back. Shne'emar Hotzivi Lo Hotzivim. It's exactly what we did. Trumos and Maestros were given in Lebanon, in Syria, in Iraq, in Jordan, in Saudi Arabia, and in Egypt. I'm just giving you the names that they call today. All right? I say it again. When you're kicked out of Israel, and you go to the surrounding areas nearby, don't forget to keep giving Trumas and Maestros, so that they're not new to you when you come back. And they did give Trumas and Maestros, even though you're not chayav to give them outside of Israel. What happened? Come on, if you're thinking, this should be falling out of your mouth. What did Rashi say you should continue doing? Right? He didn't say Trumas and Maestros. He said, Tefillin and Mezuzos, right? In that order. Which is, I understand, because the next two mitzvahs the Torah mentions is Tefillin and Mezuzos. The next two mitzvahs is Tefillin and Mezuzos, right? But that's not what this Medrash says in the Sefer on that pasuk. It's also a Machilta. Rav Shimon darshins from this pasuk to keep doing trumos and maestros. So this is why Berliner is so important. What did he say? What mistake happened?
The wrong mitzvahs.
What?
He took the wrong mitzvahs.
Yeah. Why?
So the next one.
Because in the Middle Ages, ink was very expensive. Parchment was very expensive. Practically everything they did was Rashi Tevos. Now when they print up the Shagis Aryeh, they clean up all his Rashi Tevos and they write it out. Because now it's no big deal, right? But then everything was Rashi Tevos. And you just assumed that if you wrote this, that your reader at least would know what that means. Not necessarily. They didn't hire Talmidei Chachamim to copy over manuscripts in the year 1300. They got people with good penmanship who didn't necessarily even know what they're saying, what they're writing. Right? So someone sees that and he calls up somebody and says, what does that mean? And he goes,
was the next mitzvah?
No! You look at the original source, it was Trumas and Maestros. That's why Berliner is important. Okay? That's known as a scientific addition. Okay? Now, Rashi was the first. But then over time, people started saying, why should we limit this to Rashi? Let's do this to Ibn Ezra, let's do this to Rashbam, let's do this to Ramban. And they did. Okay? All right? The next one after that was really Rashbam. It's amazing, because Rashbam didn't get into a Mikros Gedolos until about the same time. Right? Do you know enough? Why would it be smart to do Rashbam next? Ramban wasn't done until Charles Chevelle in the 50s. Right? Why do Rashbam? My guess is because it's short. It was easy. Rashbam al Torah is a small, little, thin volume. Much shorter than Rashi. Look at any page of Mikros Gedolos. So it's easy. Right? Plus, you're not dealing with 300 manuscripts like Rashi, you're just dealing with a few. Right? Okay, got it? So Ibn Ezra was done by a man named Yehuda Krinsky. Ramban was done by Chevelle. Sforno was done by Mosada Rav Kook. So what Mosada Rav Kook had, by the time this comes out, about 25, 30 years ago, they already had all the scientific editions of all this stuff. It was an easy thing. All you had to do was typeset. You know what I'm saying? By the time this came out, Mosada Rav Kook, the Chizkuni is red, the Sforno is green, Shem Ravan is blue. They already had their covers, and they had all of them already. Okay, the last one they did was actually Rashi, believe it or not. Mosada Rav Kook felt Berliner already did Rashi, but at the very end of his life, Charles Chevelle, who was the one who put out Ramban, famous Chevelle's Ramban, he put out a Rashi at the end of his life. Which I'm sorry to say was panned. It was panned because he didn't do much more than Berliner. But that's what people said. But I think he look at the end of his volume, he gives you all kinds of indexes about Rashi and other things that did not appear in Berliner. But anyway, this is what the Mosada Rav Kook page looks like. Right? And it's all it is the scientific editions that they had put out until then on all these Nefoshim. Okay? Otherwise, you're reading a text that... text here, and this is still, this is 1905 edition, still looks like a... still is using from the original 1724 versions of the Nefoshim. It needs update. It's worthwhile to do. Right. So in the last class, I gave you, I wrote down every one of everything that you would see on this page. The last one that I didn't have time to really elaborate on was the Baal HaTurim. Okay, why he gets in is because he's famous. The Baal HaTurim on the Torah is the same author as the Shulchan Aruch. Right? I'm not talking about the Yosef Karo, this is the Tur Shulchan Aruch. Yosef Karo's Shulchan Aruch is based on the Yaakov ben Harosh, the Rosh's son, who wrote and classified all of Halacha in these four columns, Arba Turim, and hence the Baal HaTurim. You get it? So when you're famous for writing the whole Shulchan Aruch, So one of the commentaries to the Shulchan Aruch, to the Torah Shulchan Aruch, is called the Beit Yosef. You've heard of that, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's Yosef Kar. He also wrote a commentary on the whole Rambam. That's called the Kesef Mishnah. So he's saying, why should I comment on other people's books? So that's the Shulchan Aruch, right? Okay, but he stayed true to the Torah's classification. The Torah wrote the commentary to the Torah, and the fact is that the Torah has two commentaries to the Torah. One is called the Bala Torah that gets in here, and one is called Tur al HaTorah. Clever. All right, and this one is very pshat oriented, very long, right? This one is usually very short. Open up any page in the Kodesh Gadol. It's usually a tiny, small, the smallest print on the page. And it is always deep, deep, deep drash, and usually gematria. Right? On any page. It's often very entertaining. Where he had the time to come up with these kinds of things? Where he had the time to say the word, the shoresh for the word to bow appears 113 times in the Torah. Okay, good. Take your word for it. And he says, and if you count up all of the Baruch Atah Hashem, Magen Abraham, Baruch Atah Hashem, Achei Meisei, Baruch Atah Hashem, Achei Al-Kadosh, Baruch Atah Hashem, you know, all the Baruch Atah Hashems at the end of Davening is 113 words. And then he goes in a whole additional points about what the number 113 has to do with prayer and bowing. Less time for this, right? Now, if you're marrying off a couple and you're having a Sheva Brachas and the name of the Chassan together with the Kala is 113 and you want to show what the Shtach HaVayah does with service to Hashem and service to each other, I don't know. You know what I'm saying? The Bala Torah is a common perush that you want to say at Shalosh Shudas or at a Sheva Brachas. Right? Why this one gets in and not the Torah LaTorah, I would say because this one is too long already, and I already have Pshat Meforshim in the Mikros Gedolos. I want entertainment. All right, this is there's nothing like it on the page of Mikros Gedolos, I got to tell you. All right, I mean sometimes Rashi will give you a parish like this. Sometimes the Das Akenim does. First Das Akenim on Bereshis, he like wants to tell you what his parish is like right away. He says the first pasuk in the Torah has 7 words. First pasuk in the Torah has 28 letters. Okay. And then there's another thing he does there, but he says the 7 words are connected to the 7 days of the week. The 28 letters are connected to the 28 days of the month. What? What month is 28 days? February? What are you talking about? Okay. Do you know how much time it takes the moon to spin around the earth?
365 days.
The moon to spin around the earth. The answer is 28 days. But there is also gravity that the moon has to contend with that elongates the month to 29 and a half days. But there's something called the sidereal revolution of the moon that is actually 28 days. That the Das Akenim would know such a thing is amazing. Right? But the first parish of the Torah, he says there are 28 letters in the first pasuk in the Torah connected the days of the month. Who would ever write such a thing? Right? Okay, anyway, that's the limit of who gets in. Now, what we have to do with the time left today is what they added some people. Okay? They added Radak. Did you know the Radak has a parish to the Torah? Did you ever open up a Radak on the Torah? Radak is famous in the Nevi'im Ksuvim. Radak has supplanted Rashi in the Nevi'im Ksuvim. But Radak is also a parish to the Torah, and all we have is Bereshis. It's very possible and likely that in 1524 and even in 1724, they had that. The reason why they didn't put them in is because the rule was you only put in what we had on the whole Torah. I don't want just a parish to write Yikra, I don't want a parish to write. I want, if I have them on the whole Torah, he's getting it. Right? We have it on evidence from contemporaries of Radak that he wrote the parish to the whole Torah, and Nebuch probably was destroyed in some kind of pogrom or something. Okay? Radak was a famous polemicist. He wrote a book that has come down to us on all the polemics against Christianity. Right? In fact, there's sometimes whole swatches of his parish that you see obviously are missing. And when you go look at the text, you see, oh, because he's talking about Edom. Christians destroyed everything he had to say about Edom. Because Edom, they felt, Radak means Christianity. So any Nebuah and Tanakh that talks about the fall of Edom, they went to Radak's parish. Right? Okay, Radak on the Torah, I got to tell you, he was a contemporary of Ramban. It's similar to Ramban, but more pshat. And shorter, and it doesn't have the Kabbalah of Ramban. If you want Ramban light, look at Radak on the Rishis. Very similar. Okay? Also very critical of the Avos and Yamos, and he also holds from Masel Siman Laponim, the two hallmarks of Ramban in the Rishis. So Radak was included. By the way, this evidence of Radak writing compares to the whole Torah also says Radak wrote a whole Shulchan Aruch of halachos for Sephardic Jews. We don't have it. It would have changed his reputation if he wrote a Shulchan Aruch 200 years before Rabbi Yosef Kara. Amazing to have. Right? There was an Ashkenazi, by the way, who wrote a Shulchan Aruch even before this. Shulchan Aruch, I mean, like a set table. It's a lashon that Rashi speaks about in Eile Mishpatim Asher Tosim Lifnehem. Set up a table, like for Shulchan Aruch. That's where the terminology comes from. The words themselves appear in Sefer Yecheskel, but not in the context of a halacha that's set up like a table. Right? The Ramah, who wrote Ashkenazic glosses, called his work Mapa, the tablecloth. Get it? Okay. Right? So the Rokeach, it's Rabbi Lazar of Worms, the Rokeach, which actually is the subject of that Mishlei I wrote there, okay? It says that book has come down to us miraculously. He writes in the Sefer Rokeach that he wrote 63 books. 63 different books. Only a few have come down to us. He writes in Parshas Vayetze, Perush the Torah, that I was studying with my child, Parshas Vayetze, and the murderers came into our house, killed all my children and my wife, stabbed me all over, burnt the whole house down, and when I came to, some hours later, miraculously alive, I saw everybody dead and all my works in ashes. Imagine such a thing. So whatever has come down to us means someone else had a copy. So when I found this manuscript through the library, I show it from in this catalog here is from the Rokeach. Right? So it's a mitzvah to try to get put out his works. Right? Okay. The current Belzer Rebbe's last name is Rokeach. He's a direct descendant. And maybe you've heard of the fish company, Rokeach, right? They put out that's also the same thing. Right. Every single statement of his is gematria. In fact, the name Rokeach is because it's the gematria of his name. That's how he chose it. They were not chemists. Rokeach is someone who mixes ingredients for medications and perfumes. They were not. There's no evidence that he was doing that. Just he chose the name because it was his gematria of his name. So. I say this because the Rokeach wrote a Shulchan Aruch for Ashkenazic Jews and in the 1200s, and then that has come down to us. You can buy in this farm store the Sefer HaRokeach. You don't know about it, and it's not very popular because it was an Ashkenazic work for Ashkenazim who were called the Hasidic Ashkenaz. They were very pietistic. They were very, very machmir. And that the Balei HaTosfos were more mainstream. These people kept 2 days for Yom Kippur in Worms and in Germany and France. Why did they keep 2 days for Yom Kippur?
Suffolk,
Yom Kippur is the day we should most keep 2 days, more than any other Yom Kippur outside of Israel. Sfekat Yomi should apply to Yom Kippur. You keep curries. Right? So what? If I do work on what was really sukkah, it's okay. It's a little sassy. But Yom Kippur, you have to keep 2 days. Right? And all kinds of very little of this Shulchan Aruch that comes down to us in daily practice. But I'll tell you one or two, very interesting. The Gemara just says you should take back these steps when you finish davening. It's the Ropeach who says you should take back these steps when you start davening also. That's if you look at some Siddur, it says, the Fi HaRokeach, you should take these steps back right now as you're starting Shmona Esrei. Okay? Also, when we say Behurachum on Friday, on Marav, to start Baruchu, that's from the Ropeach. Right? What, you know, this is what these people did. Every night before davening Marav, they would, every man would stand, they'd bend over like this, and take 39 lashes in case they violated one of the mitzvahs of the Torah that day. I'm not saying it was with a whip, but they did it with like a stick or something. And when they did it, they said, because there are 13 words in that line, right? And they said it three times. There's a remnant of this. In Lubavitch, they say B'hurachum three times before davening Marav. Right? Pretty amazing. All right, so this is the Sefer Ropeach. These were Ashkenazic, very pietistic commentaries in the Middle Ages, and it's the Ramah hardly ever quotes these works because it wasn't normative halacha. It was too, you know what I'm saying? All right, so Mosad Rav Kook includes Radak, okay? And here is an assignment for you for next class. I want it on my desk at the beginning of next class. The assignment is, besides Radak, what other changes did Mosad Rav Kook make to the Mikros Gedolos? And that includes, what did they include? What did they exclude? Okay, got it? You can just do this by looking at page 72, 73, and 74, and you can take pictures of it if you'd like, or just pick it up.
Do we need to write the text stuff also, or is it just
the commentary?
Just
say what's in there, what's not. It's a simple thing.
Okay.
Right? Here's a page. If you were here last class, you know where we did everything in the course of those. And what did he add? What's here that the Mosad Rav Kook? Now, I caution you that this is a... so this is gracious. If this was Shmos, he would include also Ibn Ezra, both Perushim of Ibn Ezra. Remember, Ibn Ezra, we have two Perushim of Ibn Ezra to Shmos. In Shmos, it includes both of them. Something the Kroos Gedolos never did. Okay? All right?
Can you repeat the question?
What changes did Mosad Rav Kook make to the next last Mikros Gedolos that has come out? Right. There's actually a third Mikros Gedolos that they stopped printing that had the Masorah Ketana and the Masorah Gedola in the middle of the notes.
It's page 71 and 72 in the packet, right?
72, 73, 74. Okay. Some Mikros Gedolos had text, Unculus. And in between, they had this. Remember, 6-7 weeks ago, we talked about the Masorah Ketana. There's little notations that they made. How many times this word appears? That also doesn't appear anymore because now we have a concordance. If you want to see how many times the word Echa appears, just look up Echa in the concordance, right? Okay. Okay, guys. Have a great day today.